Minerva Radio. Less mainstream, more music.
Greetings, this is Brock and Roll, and this is Mystery Train.
Train I ride, 16 coaches long. Train I ride, 16 coaches long. Gonna do it again.
Very much. Welcome to Brock and Roll and this special label edition with our co-presenter, Mr. Mick O'Toole. Welcome, Mick.
Thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome here to MinervaRadio.com. Oh, no, it isn't .com, is it .uk? Anyway, welcome to the show. And Mick, of course, is one of this country's leading Elvis Presley experts and historians. And in our label series, I thought it might be good to bring him in, because we're considering Sun Records. And of course, Elvis is directly connected with Sun Records. I wish he'd stayed connected with Sun Records, to be perfectly honest. But that's just my opinion, of course.
I don't think Elvis does.
No, I don't think he did, no. You've just been listening to, actually, Little Junior Parker and his Blue Flames with the original version of Mystery Train. And it's kind of original in a way, because it is really a traditional song, a little bit like Rock Island Line is a traditional song, isn't it, Mick?
Train song.
And it's got that sort of, it's almost a little spiritual aspect to it, isn't it? A bit religious, really, to it. But in this case, Junior Parker is doing it with his Blue Flames, which contained, it featured Ike Turner in his band, didn't it? On piano, I think.
Who at the time was behaving himself very well.
Yes, he was.
He was actually popular in those days.
Yeah, he was.
That's as it sounds now.
That's right. Yes, we should. For Ike Turner, we should put blank in there, shouldn't we?
Mr.
Really?
X.
That's right. Mr. X, yeah. And also, Little Junior Parker, of course, is a Howling Wolf sideman, you know, so it's a great song. And that wasn't, I don't think, a hit for Sun, but it did sell quite a few records locally. And I think the first thing we have to consider about Sun Records, I don't know if you agree, Mick, but one of the characteristic features I think of American popular music in that post-World War II era was, ironically, for the size of the country, the complete vitality of regional and local music.
Totally.
It's yes. just a series of little scenes here, there and everywhere, isn't
it? It'd
be a huge
hit just in one area.
Exactly. You've got cities and towns who can support local hits as well. It's fantastic. The geographical side as a country, you know, just meant that had to be the case, didn't it, really? And these regions and cities, you know, really did support good scenes in their way. And Memphis, of course, where Sun was based, was a good example of that, I think. And
every
of course,
kind
it's
of music.
Well, yes, indeed. And also, you've got the little entrepreneurs, haven't you? And some of these entrepreneurs, well, they might be, you know, good at transistors, or they might be good at radios, or they might be good at telly or tape, or in fact, in Sam Phillips's cases, all of the above. He was a really good technician.
Certainly was.
And, you know, these tiny little organisations that these guys formed, which are, you know, similarly record companies and radio stations, some of them become DJs as well, don't they?
Yep.
And promoters. It's so fascinating to think how important that was to this massive scene that became rock and roll.
And it's only growing then, just starting.
Yes, you do. And you find that it's interesting because it's given different names in different regions, hasn't it? Some people call it Western Bop, don't they?
And Elvis is called the King of Western Bop.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, and that name sort of dies
out
a little
bit. Which is as bad as
anything
else.
Yeah, well, exactly. It could be anything, really, goodness, yeah. And, of course, Sam Phillips is one such example of this really interesting entrepreneurship, which doesn't make a lot of money for him at times, but he still plugs away at it all of the time.
The total believer.
Yeah, and he spent months, really, waiting for Elvis's style to mature, which never happens now. You know, just waiting for this style to mature.
But you wouldn't get that sort of time anywhere now with any of these companies.
And I think you might have told me, he's also the guy that stopped Johnny Cash singing religious music.
Oh, yes.
Don't sing that. We'll sing something else.
You're a country artist, sing country.
That's right. We haven't got a Cash track lined up. It's my mistake today. But still, we'll play that another time. Anyway, Phillips, with two L's, born 1923, reasonably well off, apparently, the family. They were in northwest Alabama. And he was going to become a lawyer, but the Depression put a stop to all of that. And instead, he studied radio engineering and eventually moved to Memphis. And he was put in charge of, sounds daft now, big band broadcasts at WREC, you know.
But that's what the music scene was.
It was. And it being in Memphis, there was probably a lot of blues intonation going on there, wasn't it, in some of those bands?
There were plenty of clubs in there.
Yeah, that's right. And in late 49, found premises at, you know this address. Do you want to announce it? 706... Union Street, isn't it? Yeah. And it converted it into a recording studio. And he was still, wasn't he still doing his job at WREC at the time, I think? It's like one thing was paying for another, I think.
I think he still had one hand or one foot in there.
Yeah, I think so. And he was freelancing.
Playing on the bases.
Yeah, that's right. I think he was also freelancing. So somebody phoned up Sun Studios and said that, a telephone thing had gone down the street. He'd try and fix that as well, wouldn't he?
And he'd do weddings, anything you wanted.
Oh, did he?
Bar mitzvahs, yeah.
Oh, did he?
He'd go out and record it. He'd sit there, he'd take his gear with him and record it.
And record it as well. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, somebody taking photographs these days of weddings. And yeah,
he's a good all-rounder.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Fantastic. These guys are really important, aren't they? Anyway, the enterprise is entitled Sun. He gets to know a white Memphis DJ, Huey Phillips, no relation. White guy, and he'd play a lot of black music, which is incredibly, actually, it's a bit dangerous at that time, especially in a city like Memphis.
But all the kids used to listen to it.
They did indeed,
usually under the covers at night.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And he was able to play some of his recordings with Dewey. He was sending them to Dewey. But in the main, he licensed his recordings to other labels, and he got into a bit of trouble for this, didn't he? He licensed 5 B.B. King singles that he'd cut at Sun to RPM. That was a label that was a bit dodgy anyway, I think. Also, a Jackie Brenston track went to Chess. Roscoe Gordon went to both labels, I think, and that's when the trouble started. So RPM was saying, we should have that, and Chess saying, no, we've just released it, etc. Who's to blame? That Phillips guy in Memphis is to blame.
Got to blame for everything.
Everything. So anyway, he stuck out with doing that kind of thing, but also started to think about having his own label properly. And his first hit in 1953 was this one.
You said about me, don't you, woman? Well, you ain't nothing but a bearcat. Been scratching at my door. You ain't nothing but a bearcat. Been scratching at my door. You can purr, pretty kitty, but I ain't gonna rub you no more. You said you was a long hair, but I can see through that. You said you was a long hair, but I can see through that. And mama, I know you just an old bear cat. You ain't nothing but a bear cat. Been scratching at my door. Ain't nothing but a bear cat. Been scratching at my door. You can purr, pretty kitty, but I ain't gonna rub you no more. Oh, I'll rub ya. Oh, get with it now. Get it, get it, get it, get it. Old soup bone. You ain't nothing but a bearcat. Been scratching at my door. You just an old bearcat. Been scratching at my door. You can purr, pretty kitty, but I ain't gonna rub you no more.
I love that. It's pretty heavy sound, that, isn't it, Mick?
Very much a heavy sound.
1953.
You can imagine that exciting the kids.
Oh, definitely. I don't think I've ever heard it played by one of those sort of British R&B bands of the early 60s, you know, like the Yardbirds. But they would have done a great thing on that. Because it's got that heavy two guitar lick in it anyway.
You all get in on that one.
You do? Yeah, really good. Anyway, that's Bearcat, brackets, the answer to Hound Dog. Now, this was a hit. It was a hit on the R&B charts. And as we said, Phillips had already got into a bit of trouble with other labels, and he'd already licensed several Thomas tracks to Chess anyway. But he kept this one, and it became their first hit, regional hit, but also crept into the R&B charts at the time, because which would have been called race charts in those days. But the subtitle meant that he was sued because it mentions Hound Dog. It was Bearcat, quote, as I mentioned before, the answer to Hound Dog. So he was sued and didn't make any money out of this anyway.
Teach him a lesson.
That's right, because Rufus Thomas was also a well-known DJ in Memphis at the time. And he ends up doing a lot of vocal tracks with Stax. He has hits for them in the 60s and the 70s, really. Very, very important guy. And Carla Thomas's daughter, fantastic singer, fantastic. We'll have to play a Carla Thomas. Okay, so it's hand to mouth, isn't it, Mick, I think,
totally.
In this case? Totally. And several flops, the occasional local hit, Under the Sun imprint. But then came the revelation then, which was Elvis Presley. Of course, you're the man to know about Elvis. Now, just pick the story up. There's this confusion, isn't it, between whether it was Marion Kiesker at the Sun studio or whether Sam Phillips who claims to have been there at the time. What do you think? You're the expert on this.
It seems more likely to me that when he walked in the studio, Joni Marion Kashka there, but she could work the parts of the desk that needed doing. She said to him, "Who do you sing like?" And he said, "I don't sing like nobody." And she made a note that interesting ballad singer. And next time they were looking for a song called Without You, wanted something to do with it. And Marion said to Sam, "Phone that guy, taking his number." Oh, they actually had a phone in those days, which was pretty good going. And he phoned him. They reckon what they always say is that he was there before he put the phone down. So they struggled away for a good couple of hours with the song, couldn't get anything out of it. And Sam had brought in Scotty Moore, Bill Black.
Right. Now, that is disputed a little bit as well, isn't it? The idea of Sam being responsible for Scotty and Bill turning up as well. I've read that they just turned up, you know, on spec or something.
Well, they were sort of regarded as his session men. If he wanted to put some music together, he'd bring those two in, you know, lead guitar and a bass, and you've got it. And I think it's more likely that he would bring them in rather than Marion.
I agree, really. I think that the Marion Kashka information does sound believable, doesn't it?
Because
if Sam's around and about doing repair jobs and still doing jobs for the radio station WREC, there is a good possibility that he wasn't present when this truck driver just, you know, pulls up the truck and walks in, because he wanted to do a record for his mum, didn't he?
Well, at first, you see, it's a nice story to say it was for his mother's birthday. His mother's birthday was nowhere near that date, whatever that date was when he went in. He used to have it put on where it is. It's months away, so it's a nice thing for him to say.
I see, okay. Yeah.
He's got to explain in somewhere why you're making a record. Was my mother's birthday.
Yeah.
You and I would do that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, yes. That's
mother's
right.
Birthday.
It's my mum's birthday. Well, should we hear something? One of these great tracks. Okay.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do, that's all right. That's all right, Mama, anyway do. Well, Mama, she done told me, Papa done told me too. Son, that gal you fooling with, she ain't no good to you. But that's all right, that's all right. That's all right, Mama,
marvellous. That was recorded in 1954. We didn't get it till 1956 when Elvis's first album came out.
Right.
And it's still, believe it or not, still, I'm happy to admit, my favourite Elvis track of time.
Yes, certainly one of mine. I mean, I don't think I can split any of those Sun tracks between. I just love all of the stuff he does at Sun. I mean, I was only born in 1954, but by the time I was like, I think maybe 4 or 5, my dad was one of those guys that would buy lots of second-hand records from junk shops and, you know.
Which my dad was.
Well, I know, yeah. We had something to play it on. And he did have one of these. I think it was Elvis did a version of Blue Moon on the Sun session, didn't he?
Well, he thought he was Slim Whitman.
Yeah, and that's not very good, but it's got I Don't Care If the Sun Don't Shine, I think.
Well, I think it was a clever bit of marketing ploy to have Blue Moon on one side, and I don't care if the sun don't shine on the other. It looked good.
And he played it, and I really got off on it. I thought it was just great, you know. But I didn't know anything about Mystery Train or anything like that. There are five singles, aren't there, Mick?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is the A side of the first one?
Because that's the A side. And Blue Moon in Kentucky is the B side.
It's the B side, yeah. Did that ever get flipped or anything? Or would they just play both sides anyway? Or
I think in America more so, they tended to let people know which was the A side.
Yeah.
I mean, any DJ could flip it if he wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
I prefer the B side and you turn it over and play the other side.
I always imagine, this is only my own imagination, but I can just imagine it being the almost perfect jukebox record of all time.
For sure.
Because you might not even need a DJ for this, might you?
In the days when you got 3 for a shilling, you'd put that on 3 times.
Yeah, you would. And you'd flip it over and you'd go, oh my goodness, this is just amazing, right? So, should we do the extra?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay, let's do that.
Blue moon, blue moon, blue moon, keep shining bright. Blue moon, keep on shining bright. You're gonna bring me back on my favorite tonight. Blue moon, keep shining bright. I say blue moon of Kentucky, they keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left me blue. I say blue moon of Kentucky, they keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left me blue. Well, the heat was on one moonlight night, stars shining bright. Whisper on high, love, say goodbye. It's gone and left me blue. Well, I say blue moon of Kentucky, just to keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left me blue. I say blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left me blue.
Oh, fantastic. That's just brilliant. I mean, as a young lad, do you remember hearing that and what it did to you?
Oh, absolutely. About the album, the first time you put the album on and you play the album through, and it was, as I say, that's all right. It seems as though it jumped off the turntable.
Yeah.
We never heard anything like that. Well, obviously, I was 14 and a half, so we hadn't heard anything like that.
So what? I mean, would you flip it? Did you hear it on the jukebox or something, and you'd flip it over to Blue Moon?
Because I never got played on jukeboxes.
Oh, didn't it?
We had to wait for his first album. So that's a single in '54, the States, only parts of the States.
Yes.
And we had to wait for Elvis's first album in 1956.
Okay.
To hear it. Never heard it.
It's incredible, really, when you think about it. And if you think about the Bill Munro original of Blue Moon, again, it's a waltz, isn't it?
He was not best pleased with what Elvis and what Sam Phillips had done to it until they started to sell, of course. He changed his attitude. He was a total redneck. Can you say redneck, can't we?
Yes, I think so.
He was a total redneck and most upset about what Elvis had done
was
to his
really?
But once it started to sell, changed his mind very quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, money. I mean, the thing is, one thing that's always interested me, these are often referred to as the July 54 sessions, aren't they? So did he record Elvis doing maybe, you know, dozen of these songs in one go,
absolutely work out one single that was done, and then a week or 2 weeks, maybe a month, but he'd bring them back in again.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, over a period of time, that it kind of builds up, and there is a catalogue, but it's not there to begin with. He's just doing A, B. And would Sam have picked the A or the B, or Elvis would have had no say?
No, it would have worked in the studio.
I see.
Because even at that age, not in the sense of having the output, but what about they do something? And I mean, he knew all kinds of songs. He was like a working jukebox himself. So in between, they'd say something, and Sam heard something, do that again, okay.
Okay.
And if it worked, we'll put that one out.
Great. It's amazing. And it's less than
shoot for the mighty dollar.
Yes, that's true. And it's less than 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And Elvis is off. So So there's a deal, isn't there? And of course, that's always very interesting, isn't it, when we think about this deal? Different figures are always mentioned.
But Steve Sholes was the producer and signed that deal. It was called Sholes Madness or something for quite a while because nobody could see what the hell was going on, particularly up north in America. Mm. Well, this is the worst deal that's ever been. What's the name? And it's either $30,000, $35,000 or $40,000.
Yeah.
And Elvis got a side thing, $5,000.
Oh, did he?
He bought his first Cadillac.
Oh, is that what?
It was a pink one. And he said he bought it for his mother. But yeah. If you bought a pink Cadillac, you'd say it
would. Yeah,
you?
That's right. I did hear at one stage, I think it's not apocryphal, that Armand Ertegun made a bid for Elvis as well, and he offered $25,000.
Which Sam turned down.
Yeah, it was turned down. It's a shame he didn't go to Atlantic.
Well, he could say it's a shame he didn't go to any company other than some. But he got away from there quickly enough, so yes. It didn't matter really.
No, I don't
and
suppose
it's a
so.
Nice part of the story.
I suppose
it's
so.
It's the first chapter of his story, and it's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it is a good chapter, and it just gets you in the mood to listen to more, doesn't it, really? So we'll do that. Let's have a listen.
Care if the sun don't shine. I get my loving in the evening time when I'm with my baby. Well, it ain't no fun with the sun around. I get going when the sun goes down and I'm with my baby. Well, that's when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, who cares how many times we kiss? Cause at a time like this, who keeps score? Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine. I get my loving in the evening time when I meet my baby. We're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Who cares how many times we kiss? Cause it's a time like this, who keeps score? Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine. I get my loving in the evening time when I meet my baby. And it don't matter if the sleet or snow, I drive in cozy when the lights are low and I'm with my baby. Makes no difference if the rain comes down, I don't notice when she's around. Oh boy, what a baby. Well, that's when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, the one kiss from my baby doll makes me holler more, 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 more. Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I get my loving in the evening time when I meet my baby. So when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, one kiss from my baby doll makes me holler more, 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 more. Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I get my loving in the evening time when I'm with my baby.
Oh, I love that. Do you know what I like about that most of all? It's there's like a hiccup all the way through, both in the singing and in the guitar
music.
Playing.
Yeah.
It's got a real, and that's rockabilly, isn't it? It's real rockabilly, very raw.
And there's a little note on the side that says, unknown bongo player. To this day, still an unknown bongo player, because nobody knows who he was. Well, it could have been Sam.
It could have been, yeah.
Could have been
the
cleaner.
It almost sounds like somebody's hitting the table, really, doesn't it, rather than the bongos. But it's so raw, and it's energetic, and it's got everything about it has got something different, because you mentioned to me, of course, it's a Dean Martin song.
Well, yes, originally, yeah, yeah. Well, Elvis is a Dean Martin fan. He listens to Dean Martin. So, well, I'd like to do that, but you do it in your own way.
Of course, he's just picking songs that he likes anyway, and he's a well-known lover of the sort of the pop ballad singers.
Well, if you go through those, there's 10 sides. There's 5 singles released on Sun. That's his entire output at that time on Sun. Once the contract was sold, RCA took everything.
Yes.
And if you just listen to those 10 songs, you know what Elvis has been listening to.
Yes, I suppose you do. Speaking of which, RCA had a deal with HMV over here by the mid-50s, isn't he? So is that why some of this stuff comes out on HMV over here?
Well, the whole 10 songs, Wally Ridley was top producer at HMV.
Yes.
And somebody had sent him the whole deal. And he passed them on to somebody. I can't remember who it was who passed them on to, a second guy. And he said, I can't understand any of these. He said, see if you can make anything out on them. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you can imagine what Wally Ridley's taste would have been like in those days. God love him. But still, yeah. Imagine having something you don't realise is gold. You know, it's incredible, isn't it?
A few years back, I was reading Record Collection, a good few years back now, and somebody was offering 5 Sun singles, and they were putting them up for auction. The opening bid had to be £10,000.
Wow.
And the footnote said, even Priscilla hasn't got these. And she wouldn't have.
Wouldn't have before her time, really. She? Yeah. Babe in arms, wasn't she at the time, possibly. Anyway, moving on, of course, he doesn't last long with Sun in a way. 2 years is a long time in rock and roll, but, you know, the deal is done. And I've always thought that he puts the money that he gets from Elvis to good use, I think. I mean, he has to pay a lot of bills,
of course,
doesn't
he? But he expanded the studio.
But he does, yeah, that's right. Promotes new artists. But Rufus Thomas, and well-spoken, very erudite African-American guy in popular music, Rufus, and he did criticise Sam, didn't he, for kind of going white. Rather than previously playing a lot of African-Americans and bring them into the studios, he does sign some great artists, Johnny Cash, of course, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee, Roy Orbison as well, I think. They all go through the Sun gates, don't they, really?
Well, I think Sam's attitude was he got Elvis launched. Elvis is going big time. He said, yeah. I can do this again. I can do this over and over again.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And so, and he also brings in an assistant producer, doesn't he, which is Jack Clement. Yeah, and he was kind of an interesting character in his own right, really, and he tends to dominate the sound somewhat post-Elvis, doesn't he?
They never got on very well.
No.
Because at one stage, Sam was sacking, was it Charlie Feathers? Didn't like Charlie Feathers' attitude.
No.
Sam, Jack was laughing in the corner. So he said, well, you're sacked as well, and he's for laughing. Sacked for laughing.
There was an incident that I remember being told about a long time ago. Reportedly, one problem was that Sam had the propensity for just pushing one artist at a time. Well, the artists wouldn't have liked that, but I don't suppose he had much alternative, with or without Jack Clement, I would think. He couldn't delegate.
Well, he had his limitations, I suppose. If you think about it now, with hindsight, which is always easy, it made sense to concentrate on one.
Yeah. Especially if you are starting to break somebody into the lower regions of the national charts as well, with Alexa Perkins. Yes. Jerry Lee, you know, that's something you've got to fully concentrate on that for quite some time. But apparently Billy Lee Riley didn't like this, and he poured whiskey over the control room desk, especially when he discovered that Jerry Lee Lewis was being plugged ahead of him. So that's an interesting one, isn't it? But speaking of Billy Lee Riley, I really like this.
Sure.
Okay.
Me dead.
great long ending, that, I think. I love that drum roll, isn't it? That's Billy Lee Riley. And what would they call the Little Green Men or something?
That's what it's called, yeah.
That's right.
It's all novelty stuff. It's all daft names. Yeah. Nobody cared in those days.
It's a great voice going on there. Yeah, that's right. And then, you know,
rock and roll voice.
Yeah, fantastic.
Good looking guy as well. Similar to Elvis look.
Yes, that's right. He was a pretty good looking guy, wasn't he? And we were just talking while it was on. Ian, our producer, was asking us whether a lot of these guys were influenced by Elvis. I don't know if that's the case. They were kind of trying to emulate Elvis sometimes.
I don't see how
they?
You couldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because whatever you had in mind, you saw Elvis actually performing live and what he was doing, the women, of course, particularly. Yes. You said, well, I've got to do that.
Yeah. But they've also, they seem to, a lot of the artists, obviously, because of the different voices and different instrumentation, that kind of doesn't sound like rock and roll as pervaded by Elvis, quite, does it? It seems heavier. It's like a bigger band. There must be a four-piece band in there.
Elvis had tightened it. The whole production. And it, I mean, Buddy Holly saw Elvis in a country act, and overnight they said, we're going to do what Elvis does.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Lee Riley's band sound very tight, and it's bigger than the Elvis sound, isn't it? Because we've only got a bass and a guitar.
Seven in Billy Riley's band.
Yeah, it's a very interesting sound, that, coming out of song. So anyway, there's a bit of trouble here and there. I mean, Sam is popular in spades with some people, but less so with other people, isn't he?
He could be a very prickly character.
Yes, he could indeed. And there were acrimony building up, weren't there, from artists and also other people, but particularly the artists. Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins, I think, both went to CBS, didn't they? What was the problems there with Cash? I know, as we mentioned at the front of the show, that Sam stopped Johnny Cash from performing religious music. He didn't want him to do any religious music.
I don't think he wanted to do rock either. He wanted to stay as a country artist. Same with Carl. Well, Carl Perkins was a country artist.
Yes, yeah.
And Cash at the time was. Cash's trouble was, once this had gone beyond this, he went to Nashville too early, I thought.
Yes.
And he came back as showbiz. Well, never the same after.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always think of him, because being a Bob Dylan fan, I associate Cash. I mean, they were quite good friends, weren't they, Dylan and Cash? And, you know, there's a very early Sun track, which actually I didn't select for today, but we should play another time, where he's doing, I think he's doing Rock Island Line, I think, at Sun.
We did record it.
Yeah, and it's really good. It's a really good version of it too, you know. So it makes me think, I don't know if you've ever thought, you know more about this than I do, was Cash ever inclined towards the American folk revival, I think, or was he always wanting to be a country singer?
I think he had one foot in the country and one foot in...
Yeah, I mean, he played Newport a couple of times, didn't he, the folk festival? He's an interesting character in those early days. And we were lining up a track, actually, from this time, but I forgot to put it on, really. But his version of Folsom Prison Blues from the mid-50s is a very interesting one. You could actually hear him, in a way, in your head, playing that at Newport, at the Newport Folk Festival, and people loving it, really.
Yeah, much more folky.
Very much so, I think. So, interesting character from that point of view. Carl Perkins, he does very well, but never seems to be able to do well enough with Sun, does he?
He's always like a fringe character.
Yeah, yes. And of course, you know, God love him, he wasn't the best looking guy in the world, was he? And was a bit older than all of the other rock and roll people, so didn't stand much of a chance visually, especially when Elvis had made all of those massive amount of fans through his TV broadcast.
And he was married, of course.
And he was married too.
15-year-old.
That's right. Although his songs are great, aren't they? You know, doing songs about shoes and, you know, trousers are really interesting, I always think. But not all the time. Yeah, that's right. Good picker, though. And what about Roy Orbison? I mean, he makes a few cuts a few sides for Sun, doesn't he?
But you get the impression that they didn't like each other. Sam didn't like Roy and Roy vice versa. They didn't like each other. And whatever Sam's ideas were, that's what Roy wanted, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think both of them knew he wasn't going to be there very long.
Yeah, I suppose he goes to a more sympathetic and understanding producer, really, doesn't
he? Well, you had to have somebody who could respond to that voice at that time.
Yes.
I mean, it's all right, years afterwards you can dig these things out, but at that time you needed someone who could hear what was in Roy Orbison's voice and make good use of it. I don't think Sam was that interested.
No, I don't think so. But what about the Jack Clement and Bill Justice going? I mean, is that like a clash of personalities then?
Very much so, yes.
And they form their own labels, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. So he's kind of...
And they have a few artists with them.
Yes, they do. Yeah, that's right. And it's almost like Sam is sort of being left behind a little bit in the development of of a modern day country scene as well, to a certain extent. Because was Sam ever a country fan as such?
I don't think so. Sam was a classical music fan.
Yeah. Amongst other things. Oh, really?
But he liked classical music. But I think it was a case of the famous story about, if I could find a white guy who could do the stuff I wanted, I'd make $1 million.
Yeah.
And once he did, I don't think he knew what to do with it. You know, so, well, I've done that now. What do I do next?
Well, in a way, you would, wouldn't you, in some respects? Because it's such a one-off, and it's such a... It changes the world, almost, doesn't it,
rock
really?
Rock and roll is born.
Yeah. And what do you do after that?
Not a lot. Not much to do, is there?
Yeah. I know. It's a very interesting historical thing. And looking back on stuff like this, you get it wrong, really. You almost think, well, what else can he do? And why didn't he do this? And why didn't he do this? But as we said, how did you follow
it's
that?
It's a hindsight question.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, $35,000, or whatever it was, fortune in the
world. A lot of money. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he needed the money.
Yeah, he certainly did.
He needed the money. So anyway,
he wasn't the best of business.
No, he's not. I'm just about to say.
It was the best thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah,
selling Elvis.
Most likely.
The man who sold Elvis.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And of course, he probably got a bit of mileage out of that over the years too, didn't he? Speakers at the conferences.
Yeah.
So anyway, by late 59, 706 Union's closed, which is interesting. And in the 60s, I think it's 60 and 61, there's new Sun Studios opened, which is a good thing, you know, and they're opened in Memphis at 639 Madison. And I tend to think possibly a mistake, this, a huge mistake, possibly. He opens a studio at 7th Avenue North in Nashville.
Wasting his time up there.
Yeah. Why do you say that, Mick? I mean, I agree, but why would you say that?
He was a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
And when he went to Nashville, he was a very small fish in a very big pond.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And of course, it's a very conservative city at that point.
Oh, very much so, yes. Yeah. I think there's a lot of ill feeling about it. Who's that guy? That's that guy who covered Elvis and it sold him.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Oh, well, let's have a bit of music then. Okay. Let's go back to Elvis's, you know, June and July work. July it is, isn't it, 54? And let's pick another couple out of it. So we've run these together, so we'll back announce.
You're a heartbreaker. Heartbreaker, heartbreaker, playing with fire. You're a tear snatcher, you're a quarrel patcher, but you can't break my heart anymore. For I have just found someone else who's sure to take your place, someone I can always trust and fill this empty space. You're a heartbreaker, you're a love faker, but you can't break my heart anymore. You're a smooth talker, you're a real cool walker, but now you have talked out of turn. You're a high stepper, you're an eye catcher, but you won't catch my glances anymore. For I have just found someone else who's sure to take your place, someone I can always trust and fill this empty space. You're a heartbreaker, you're a love faker, but you can't break my heart anymore. You're a heartbreaker, you're a love faker, a heartbreaker playing with fire. You're a tear snatcher, you're a quarrel patcher, but you can't break my heart anymore. For I have just found someone else who's sure to take your place, someone I can always trust and fill this empty space. You're a heartbreaker, you're a love faker, but you can't break my heart anymore.
Where I have left, she's gone. Where I have left all alone. Well, you tried to tell me so, but how was I to know that she was not the one for me? You told me all along.
You're right, I love what's wrong. But now I've changed my mind, cause she broke the tie of mine, and I know that she'd never care for me. Well, I thought I knew just what she'd do. I guess I'm not so smart. Are you trying to tell me all alone? She'd only break my heart. I'm left, you're right, she's gone. You're right, and I'm left all alone. Well, she's gone, I know not where, but now I just don't care. For now, I'm falling for you. I'll make it up somehow. So happy we will be in a home for three, and I'll soon forget her. Now I know. Well, I thought I knew just what she'd do. I guess I'm not so smart. Why you try to tell me all alone? You don't break my heart. I'm left, she's gone. You're right, and I'm left all alone. Well, she's gone, I know not where, but now I just don't care. For now, I'm falling for you.
5 minutes of sheer magic.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice
country,
to run them together,
country,
isn't
and
it?
It's rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. What are they? Tell us what they are, Mick.
Well, the confidence in his voice for a 19-year-old.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's great. And I wonder, are these A sides or B sides? Is one an A, one a B, or?
Yeah. Well, the way they were released, "I'm Left You're Right, She's Gone" was the B side of "Baby Let's Play House."
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. But you can imagine people flipping that.
Of course.
Can't
of course.
And are we talking about big sellers around Memphis?
Regional sellers.
Yes. Yeah, so thousands, possibly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, 50, 20,000. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. As each one sold a few more, so you got 20,000, 30,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So enough to make money.
The rest of America didn't know anything about this.
No.
Well, I mean, obviously we didn't. Yeah. The rest of America didn't either.
No. I mean, I love Lonnie Donegan, but it's not Lonnie Donegan, this, is it? It's something on top of that, isn't it? And isn't it funny over here, doesn't Lonnie Donegan sort of fill the gap in the charts between Bill Haley on the one hand and Elvis on the other? There's a time gap, isn't there?
Well, he was in the charts at Rock Island Line about 3 months before Bill Haley was.
Right, okay. It's interesting that, isn't it? Yeah, so there's all gaps, spaces.
Course,
yeah.
There's a timeline.
Yeah.
You sit down if you're patient enough and work out the timeline. Yeah. The songs.
You could, yeah, yeah. You know, one goes out of the charts. And the fact that, you know, with going back to the skiffle thing, the fact that the word rock is in Rock Island Line, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Well, over the years, I've seen that on umpteen rock and roll compilations.
Yeah.
I'm right in the middle of somewhere or there's Rock Island Line. Yeah. Why not?
But that Elvis stuff is just amazing.
And he's having so much fun.
It's raw, though,
I think,
as well,
that chuckle in the voice.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to
19 years of age.
The RCA stuff is, there's some great stuff going on there, but it is rather sophisticated, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of it's overproduced.
Yeah, yeah. This is almost.
But he had an amazing amount of control in the studio.
Yeah.
There was a producer there, but nobody took a notice to him.
No.
Even so, you know, there's too many musicians.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like punk of the 50s in a way, really. Many
very,
respects.
Very cleverly produced punk.
Exactly. Well, we were saying before about these studios, and they are very interesting. Doesn't Scotty Moore, because they have a row and they leave, don't they?
Well, he won't pay them enough.
No, that's
right. Skinflint.
But he comes back in the late 50s, I think, to be the studio manager at Madison, doesn't he, at 639 Madison. So he's in charge of studio production, in a way, after the whole event, isn't he?
He has his own hit. He's like a Thomas Wayne.
Yes,
has a song called
right.
Tragedy.
Yes.
And Scotty produces it and puts it out on his own label. Never
hit right.
Literally a one-hit wonder
from
the artist and the producer's point of view.
So would you say that he kind of, that Sam Phillips has taken a back seat by this time?
Well, as I said before, once he'd done what he wanted to do, He must have sat there scratching his head, well, what do we do next? And I think he overloaded him, so he took too many artists on.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there are successes, aren't there?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Carl Mann has successes in the charts, doesn't he? Charlie Rich has successes. And, of course, Jerry Lee has some success, but more in a country style. This is the early days of his moving towards country music, isn't it? The late 50s.
Well, both of his releases in this country, Whole Lot of Shaking, Great Balls of Fire, both of them had a country check on the other side.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. He was always a big... And, of course, he does become a big mainstream
tremendous.
Country artist.
I think he's bigger
than
country
60s.
Than ever was in rock and roll.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely massive. So, you know, that's interesting that that's been spotted as well. Or else, you know, Jerry Lee has refused to sing any more of the Devil's music, maybe. You don't know,
yeah,
do
not
you?
For long.
No, not for long. Not until the next bottle of bourbon turns up. Yeah, that's right. Oh, gosh. Okay, let's carry on with a bit of Elvis, shall we? Let's just move along with this one.
Baby, 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 baby,
baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, baby, come back, baby, I wanna play house with you. Now listen, let me tell you, baby, what I'm talking about. Come on back to me, little girl, so we can play some house. And now, baby, come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, I wanna play house with you.
All in the house, baby.
One thing, baby, why don't I want you to know? Come on back and let's play a little house so we can act like we did before. But so baby, come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, I wanna play house with you.
Hit it!
To understand, I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to be with another man. And I'd love it, baby, come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, come. Come back, baby, I won't play out with you. Oh,
baby, 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 come back, baby, I want to play out with you.
What a sense of fun there is in that.
Lovely.
I mean, the kick up and the chuckle in his voice. And he's obviously, I keep stressing this, he's having so much fun. Oh. And so are the musicians with him.
Yeah, and it's a bit naughty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's suggestive.
You've got to work it out, but it's a bit naughty.
We don't know what he's after. Everybody knows what he's after. It's quite obvious.
Yeah. Well, A side, B side, Mick?
That was A side. Maybe Let's Play House.
Great stuff. And isn't this in that particular lyric, there's a lyric that's lifted by John Lennon, isn't there? Yeah.
I'd rather see you with the mother man.
Yeah, that's right.
And we had to wait, incidentally, till 1959 before we ever heard that.
Really?
In 59, they put an album out called A Date with Elvis. Elvis was in the army.
Yes.
And so very cleverly, he just grabbed a dozen tracks, put this album out, picture of Elvis on the front in army uniform, and a calendar on the back with the date mark that he was coming out of the army. These are the sort of ploys that RCA got up to, you know, but it worked and it sold.
Yeah.
But you got that, you see, and you never heard it before.
Oh, great stuff. It's great stuff. And that's in the closing years of Sun, in a way, as well, isn't it? And there is a track I'd like to play, though, one of my old favourites. I don't even know if you know this or not, but I think I might have heard it. I think Kenny Johnson might have played this on Radio Merseyside.
It's some good stuff, Kenny.
He certainly did. Kenny did, yeah. And this is Charlie Rich. So this is in this time when it's becoming a bit country-politan, Sun. But this did do very well, and I love the title of it because it's called. You have to put an accent on this. There's another place I can't go to.
Never heard. Let's
break the Elvis up a little bit with this. This is Charlie Rich from 1963, and there's another place I can't go to.
Down to the river where we meet. if I went bare, I'm sure my tears would flow. The crazy little drive-in where we used to eat. There's another place that I can't go. The town keeps getting smaller day by day. I can't escape the love we used to know. The honky-tonk where we danced the night away. There's another place that I can't go. I say, oh my, how do I ease this pain? Ooh, gone, but the memories still remain. Well, I can't remember how we used to kiss. The way you said you'd always love me so. And how your loving arms would open wide to me. There's another place that I can't go. Ooh, my, how do I ease this pain? But the memories still remain. Well, I still remember how we used to kiss. The way you said you'd always love me so. Yeah, and how your loving arms would open wide to me. There's another place that I can't go. There's another place that I can't go.
What do you think of that, Mick?
I like it. I enjoy
it. It's good, isn't it? You've not heard that before, no?
Well, as I was listening to it, I thought if I was in a quiz and somebody played this and said, guess this artist, I wouldn't have guessed Charlie Rich.
Very young Charlie Rich, of course.
It could be one of his first tracks.
It may well have been. And it's a Sun track. Now, I don't know whether it was one from Nashville. It sounds like it might be because the production's very classy on it. You know, there's almost a sort of a light orchestra behind it. Yeah, yeah. So, but I've always loved that. And I think Kenny Johnston played that at some stage. Yeah. Or maybe Spencer Lee, possibly. But I think it's more Kenny's material, really.
Sadly missed Kenny.
Yeah, he's sadly missed. I could just imagine, you know, Northwind doing a really good version of that, couldn't you? Yeah, great stuff. That's Charlie Rich. And there's another place that I can't go, which... I've kept an old bootleg CD from many years ago because it's got that on. The rest of it I'm not really bothered about. I suppose we should remember that, you know, that there is this history of Sun, which is, you know, early. I suppose it's split into three periods, really, isn't it? It's early stuff with Sam Malone and Marion, of course. Then there's the Jack Clement era, you know, and the falling out. And then there's the Nashville era as well, which kind of, it never really works at all. And that's a highlight probably from that era as well. Now, Sam bumps along, doesn't he, in the 60s? You know, he's still doing production work here and there. It's the Sun Studios are still knocking about, really. Although I think one ends up closing before the other. But in July 69, he sells Sun. Now, I don't know how much, but, I mean, was it much, do you think, or?
I've no idea. He was very close-mouthed to Sam, where money was concerned, particularly.
I suppose his copyrights would have been worth money, wouldn't they? You know, stuff like that, for example, you know. And a guy called Shelby Singleton.
A dubious character.
Yeah, you might say
that. But we can say it, can't we?
Yeah.
And he's probably dead anyway.
And, well, yeah, but he's in the reissue game, isn't he?
So
by the time I'm buying records in the early 1970s, Philips have got a deal with Shelby Singleton. So all of this stuff comes out again. I remember buying a Jerry Lee album on a Sun label, but it's on Philips.
Yeah.
And it only cost about 14 and six, I think, something like that. So he's in that business, isn't he, really, Shelby Singleton? All the budget, the Woolworths and the major stores. Yeah. And also, he's the guy behind Orion, isn't he? Tell us about Orion.
Orion was, well, his real name is Jimmy Ellis, and somebody came up with the bright idea of him pretending to be Elvis. Obviously, he was the first tribute act, I suppose.
Yeah.
He hadn't had one.
I suppose so, yeah.
But he'd come out on stage in a full gear and he'd wear a mask. And tried to pass himself off as Elvis and make records. And he'd say, is this Elvis or isn't this?
Yeah.
Who was the mystery singer on this?
Yeah. I remember it actually because my wife and I, we first went to the States in 76, actually, just on a, you know, a long trip around. And every time we'd go into a Walmart or a Woolies in those days, and you'd see all of these Orion albums stacked up unsold, you know. And I was tempted. They were only a book or something like that, but I didn't buy one, you know, because it just seemed so corny at the time. And ironic, isn't it, that Sun are responsible for Orion?
But exactly. Yeah. And I think late 70s, Jerry Lewis put an album out that was full of guest artists, and he had Orion. But he tried to pass him off as Elvis and thought that people would fall. I mean, Jerry Lewis, of all people.
Of all people,
I think he'd know better. Well, he wasn't there, but he was the producers.
Yeah.
Yeah, couldn't blame Jerry Lee, really.
No, I don't suppose so. Well, listen, we've just time for one more track. Okay. Thanks for coming in. It's been
Thank
great.
Thank you, I enjoyed it.
Great. We've done this on location, actually, in Mick's pad in Liverpool. His rather trendy pad in Liverpool.
So don't mention where I am. The pieces are still looking for
them. I won't. Let's go out with Elvis. We started with Mystery Train, didn't we? Yeah. We finish with
going
this
out
today.
Yeah, let's catch do it before that. Before it goes.
Cheers.
Thank you, Michael. I enjoyed that.
Me too.
Train I ride, 16 coaches long. Train I ride, 16 coaches long. Well, that long black train got my baby and gone. Train, train, coming round the bend. Train, train, coming round the bend. Well, it took my baby, but it never will again. No, not again. Train, train, coming down the line. Train, train, coming down the line. Well, it's bringing my baby, 'cause she's my all, mine, she's my all, mine. Train, train. Train, coming round the bend. Well, it took my baby, but it never will again, never will again.